'cause Vermonters come down with your breeches of deerskin and jackets of brown, with your red woolen caps and your moccasins. Come to the gathering summons of trumpet and drum. Come down with your rifle, let gray wolf and fox howl on in the shadow of primitive rocks. Let bare feet securely from pig pen and stall. Here's two-legged game for your powder and ball. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer. On the south came the Hessians, our land to police, and armed for the battle while canting of peace. On our east came the British, the red-coated band, to hang up our leaders and eat up our land. Oh, all to the rescue, for Satan shall work no gain for the legions of Hampshire and York. They claim our possession, the pitiful knaves. The tribute we pay shall be prisons and graves. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer. We owe no allegiance, we bow to no throne. Our ruler is law, and the law is our own. Our leaders themselves are our own fellow men, who can handle the sword and the scythe and the pen. Hurrah for Vermont, for the land that we till must have sons to defend her from valley and hill. Our vow is recorded, our banner unfurled. In the name of Vermont, we defy all the world. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer. And cheer, cheer, the green mountaineer.
Here we stand. I'm your host, Kevin Annett. It's March 4th, and welcome back. That's the Ballad of the Green Mountain Boys from Vermont. We owe no allegiance, we bow to no throne. Our ruler is law, and the law is our own. That's the theme of self-governance that made the American Republic, that is sustaining freedom around the world. Self-governance on a personal, a political, and a spiritual front. That's really the theme and the purpose of this program. We're here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, and 11 p.m. to all the friends over in Greenwich. Meantime, in the land of Albion, Tom Paine, in Common Sense, said, "We have it in our power to begin the world over again." He wrote that at a low point in the struggle. He was in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, with a couple of thousand other people who were the remnant of the Continental Army, fighting 40 to 50,000 soldiers of the best-trained and most powerful army in the world. And it's interesting there in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania, that he roused the spirits of the people in that state and that territory, because today's two guests on our program, Marjorie Hudson and Alana Hartzuck, are from South Central Pennsylvania, not that far from Valley Forge. Today's show is their discussion with us of their struggle, many struggles going on right in that state in Pennsylvania, against corporate agribusinesses and the Pennsylvania General Energy Company that are attempting to destroy the land for the sake of profit. Marjorie and Alana will be with us in a few minutes. I want to remind folks that you can follow our work, itccs.org. That's the tribunal website, International Tribunal of Crimes of Church and State, itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. You can find all of our books. Put Kevin Annett into amazon.com, and they'll all come up. Important books which help us carry on the struggle for the common law, Whistleblower's Manual, Common Law Training Manual, some of the more popular books. Please go to there and follow those and get those books, get them in circulation. Now, one of the questions that have come out this last little while, one of our listeners said, "How come there isn't more Canadian content on your show? I mean, after all, this program has been on the air for over 3 years. It started out as Radio Free Canada, an attempt to establish a common law republic in Canada in the wake of the revelations of the criminality of church and state after their efforts to wipe out Indigenous people and others in Canada. Why not more Canadian content? That's where the show started. That's where, in fact, a lot of our evidence and work historically has been based." Well, here's an interesting statistic. 60% of the active members of our network, now that's the Common Law Training Network, the campaign to stop child trafficking and child killing, the campaign to expose church and state and their crimes, 60% of the active members of that network are in America. 30% are in Canada, and 10% are in Europe and the rest of the world. So it's interesting that despite the fact that this movement began in Canada, twice the number of people in America are involved in it. And I think that says something about the culture and the political climate in America. Politics is about taking personal responsibility. It doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican, left, right, center. As a matter of fact, as you'll hear today, the struggle in Pennsylvania, the different townships to defend the land is taken on by both Democrats and Republicans. This crosses party lines. Politics is about taking personal responsibility. And unfortunately in Canada, because the whole legacy of the British Empire, our defeated Republican Revolution in 1837, we were raised in a culture of conformity and subservience. Whereas in America, you're taught from a young age, even if it doesn't happen often, you're taught at least you're a citizen of a self-governing republic. And that affects us differently in terms of how we take on these issues. So I think it does have an impact. Anyway, we're not going to let that hold us back. We are putting out the appeal constantly for people in Canada to come up with programs, especially now leading up to Operation Atonement. And just another note on that, on March 30th to April 1st, there's a preparatory stage in this Operation Atonement, which is the campaign to actually stop criminal churches, arrest their officers, get people to leave these churches, stop paying the money, and stop the tax-exempt status and the legal protection enjoyed by the Catholic, the Anglican, the United Churches for their crimes against children. That campaign is going to start a preparatory phase during Good Friday Easter weekend. That's March 30th to April 1st. During that weekend, people, and there's a call-out, you can find this online this week at itccs.org, asking people to commence for 48 hours between noon on Good Friday and noon on Easter Sunday morning, April 1st, asking people to enter 48 hours of meditation, prayer, fasting, and separation from these churches. And there's a form you can fill out saying you're not going to participate in these churches anymore. Put it in the collection plate. Let these church and criminal officers know that we're not going to support their false churches any longer. So that'll be starting for all of you who are active in organizing for Operation Atonement. That's something that will actually begin. Next week, when we have the folks from Ireland back on the show, they're going to be talking about some of their own planned actions about that. So please tune in for that. It's only 6 weeks away, Operation Atonement. If you want more information, write to itccsoffice@gmail.com. See itccs.org for more information on that. And then in terms of the some more background on that, please go to Amazon.com and get my latest book, Mouth of a Cannon, that describes some of the background that's needed for this. It's really describing the history of genocide on the west coast of Canada, how church, state, and corporations gathered together to take the land and wipe out over 90% of the people. Those genocidal crimes don't go away. They're continuing under different names, different locations. Because we didn't stop it then, that's carrying on today, folks. And we're going to hear some of that today. And finally, a little reminder before we get Marjorie and Alana on the air. Next week is Daylight Savings. Leap forward an hour, March 11th. Be sure you've done that or you'll miss the show. And like I say, next week we're going to have the folks from Ireland on describing their efforts to battle child trafficking through the private corporation TUSLA, which is grabbing children for profit as we speak. Now, without further ado, I have Marjorie Hudson and Alana Hartsuk on the air. Hello, folks.
Hi, Kevin.
Oh, hello, Kevin.
It's excellent to have you on here. And I gave a little bit of a background, but why don't I ask you both to say a little bit about yourselves, and then maybe Alana will get you to start up. Marjorie, you go ahead and just say something about who you are and what you're about.
Okay. My name is Marjorie Hudson, and I live in South Central Pennsylvania, right along the Mason-Dixon line, which is where the war between the North and the South occurred. As a part of a small community, we're taught that the government will protect us with its regulations, but we've found out that the regulations are to benefit and indemnify the corporations, and that we have no home rule. So we've been working on getting more local control. And Alana's been working on that, too.
Excellent. Well, Alana, go ahead.
Yeah, Alana Hartsock here. I live in Franklin County. I'm the next county next to Marjorie in South Central PA. She's in Fulton. And I met her when I was doing my 2014 run for Congress. And she was one of a few of these fierce, wonderful women. Didn't matter what political party they began to, I still don't know, belong to, but who was brought out the fighting spirit once their land in their locality was being threatened. And they have just stepped forward in such strong, incredible leadership for us all. Because if we don't have democracy where we live, we don't have democracy, and that's what we found out.
Right. Well,
and we found out that in 2014 that they were issuing permits for a large industrial-sized CAFO, which is a hog farm, that they wanted to put in over 8,000 hogs in less than 5 acres. And we felt that that would be detrimental to the groundwater and the area that we live in. So we did our investigations and found out that it would be worse than detrimental. It would be hazardous to everyone in it.
We're going to get into that, Marjorie, in some detail. I want you to talk about that. First, I want to ask Alana to give a little bit of the background. This is not the first time that communities are uniting in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Maybe you could mention a little bit about up in Indiana County and the township.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, you've had Judy Wancosm on your radio program a couple times, I think. And
yep.
Judy's community is the one fighting against having PGE, it's a corporation involved with fracking, and they want to put a deep frack wastewater well in their community. They're all on wells, and the encasements invariably break at some point, so that would destroy their groundwater and destroy their ability to even live in their township, plus all the trucks and noise bringing this poisonous radioactive chemical-filled water into that well. So they have been working with Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. I was there a few weeks ago and heard the founder, Tom Lindsay, speak. As an environmental lawyer, he said he used to think if we just had more wins on cases, more case laws supporting environmental protection and so on. It took him about 10 years, he said, to he really realized that the government and the corporations were all linked together. That was the power structure, and it was just going to be probably coming down to nonviolent civil disobedience. They're trying to get their way through the courts. There's another ruling coming up with Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. That will be important. But so far, there's a legal case been brought against the CELDEF lawyers of $50,000 for their interference. Yeah.
Right. And I find that, you know, the whole case there is so inspiring because of the Home Rule Charter they brought in. Do you want to kind of mention that briefly, and perhaps it relates to what we're going to talk about?
Well, we have in Pennsylvania, as they may have in other states, the capacity for a municipality, a township, a city, to apply for a strengthened ability for local rule, a little bit more empowerment, ability to make more independent decisions. So Grant Township achieved that home rule status. Then they added a couple amendments to their township code. One was that they would have a rights of Mother Earth. Now, this is the first one that's been in a government document in the United States. The country of Ecuador is the first nation on the earth to have a rights of Mother Earth embedded in the new constitution that they then developed. That Tom Lindsay also consulted with Ecuador on that. But this was the first case in the United States. Now, there's a couple more since then. This was a few years ago. They also put in their Home Rule Charter a clause that people would not be fined or arrested for nonviolent civil disobedience. That means
yep.
the local township government, which they now are controlling, the people who don't want this fracking well, are controlling the township government. they would not arrest or fine people for nonviolent civil disobedience in preparation for what they saw might be the likelihood of needing to go in that direction. And eventually it looks like that's where it's going to take them. Now, interesting enough, a tiny, small rural township, the population's only, it's less than 1,000, has made two major articles in Rolling Stone magazine about their struggle. So people are definitely watching what's going on there. What Marjorie's doing is equally significant.
Okay, well, Marjorie, why don't you tell us about your campaign and what where it's at right now?
In 2014, we filed our first appeal, and that was for their first permit that was issued for the nutrient management plan, because we read it and we could see that it managed no nutrients. And the nutrients they speak of are 11.4 million gallons of hog manure annually that would be trucked out of the facility and applied to our local farm fields within about 4 miles, because it doesn't pay to haul that stuff long distance. But our area is known as a karst topography and limestone geology, which means we have lots of caves and underground sinkholes and streams, and it's a critically sensitive area to be applying more than 11 million gallons of extra manure every year. And that it doesn't stop at that, because we calibrated what they call the grow out. They were going to need two nursery barns of 9,600 piglets each, and they were going to need 16 finishing barns, and each of them has a large amount of manure with it, because this is a breeding facility, and they're going to pump out more than 9,600 piglets every month. So it's going to impact our area greatly, as Alana knows.
Now, when you say they, could you tell us who this company is? Who exactly are the perpetrators?
Well, this particular CAFO integrator is Country View Family Farms, which is part of the vertical business model of Hatfield Quality Meats. Also, Clemens Family Corporation, CFC, Fulton, Clemens Food Group. They have a lot of different legal entities that they have in their model. They're located in Hatfield, Pennsylvania, which is near Lancaster.
Now, apparently the judge in this case, unlike what folks in Grant Township experienced, the judge is actually sympathetic. You got a good ruling. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we filed this an emergency supersedis request because the state had approved another permit called a PAG-02. That would have enabled the CAFO to begin land development, which would have been road building into the property, retaining ponds, retention ponds, drainage ponds, and the site prep itself. And our main approach on this was that this was a particularly sensitive area, and for them to cut and fill over 40 feet, cut 40 feet down, fill 40 feet across to make a flat pad, we felt that that was detrimental to the environment even before they would start to build. So we asked for a supersedis hearing, which we received, and the judge came out to the property, and he ruled in our favor. And his opinion letter supporting the supersedis order is pretty scathing. It's been written about in the Bay Journal.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that article. Do you want to talk a little bit about what his comments were?
Oh, well, his comments.
I noticed
let's
that.
Let's see if I have any of them here. Well, he did comment that the Country View Family Farms had the information, had literally no appropriate data to show that it could protect water quality downstream, and that at one point, one of the tests that they wanted to ignore showed, these are called perk tests, which shows how fast your water percolates into the ground. This one perk test showed 982 inches of water per hour percolating into the soil. And the judge said that was basically like pouring water down a crack. and that the Department of Environmental Protection had basically approved an experiment, and he was wondering why the department would not insist on appropriate pre-development testing.
Okay, now hold on to that, because I wanted to ask Alana, too. We found the same thing with the Grand Township thing. The Department of Environmental Protection would seem to actually be working against environmentalists and protecting the land.
That's right. What we, the people involved in these local struggles, have been finding out is that neither the United States Department of Environmental Protection, nor the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, nor the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection are really protecting we, the people. They very easily can be brought into collusion with the corporations. And the efforts of these localities to find a redress of their grievances through these environmental agencies have not been successful.
That's, you know, talking to Judy Wen Chisholm on the air, she said it basically they realized that the EPA was working hand in glove with the corporation and attacking. Actually, didn't they sue the folks in Grand Township themselves?
Department of Environmental Protection has a lawsuit in partnership with the PGE Corporation. And that is the common law court case that I went up to hear that hearing a few months ago in Harrisburg. So the Grant Township had to have its own community environmental legal defense fund lawyer testify on their behalf on a very powerful, novel approach to local empowerment, local democracy, and against then the environmental agency, essentially the state and the corporation in collusion against the people.
Now, this is a much bigger issue. I want us to talk about this, but before we finish on this, I want to ask Marjorie, you won this temporary victory. Obviously, the company is going to challenge this. When are you back in court again for this?
Well, they have gotten extensions of time at 90 days at a clip. The next extension runs out March the 12th of this year. They'll probably, if the Department of Environmental Protection has not looked at their plans by then, they'll request another 90-day extension. So we don't really know when we're going to get our day in court to hear the underlying cases that we have. But it's essentially a moving target. Whenever we make a notation of deficiency, they have the option and the right to change something to bring it into whatever compliance would satisfy the department, whether we think it's adequate or not. So I don't know when we'll have our final day in court, but we're waiting. We've been waiting since 2014. But the EPA did a pretty scathing report in February of 2015 on the animal agriculture program in Pennsylvania in relation to the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah.
It said every farm in Pennsylvania that applies manure to fields is required to have a nutrient manure management plan, but the number of farms that actually have the plans is not tracked by the state. There's no requirements that the plan be submitted to the state, and that there's no assurance that farms with plans are implementing them, and that the districts are allowed to conduct outreach to the farmers about the plans, but they're not authorized to enforce regulations. So I want you to think about your IRS tax filing that you do every year. That's required by law. This is voluntary compliance. There's no verification, no enforcement, and no reporting. So when there's no reporting, that means there's no document that citizens can look at to compare their progress. That we can't obtain this information under right to know, and I have to question whether that's intentional. They don't want it in their office, so we can't get it.
Well, usually when governments do that, they've got something to hide, usually corporate collusion.
Yes.
Let me ask you, too.
Which brings to mind a great quote. I brought this quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn that I thought I might read, and this seems a good time.
Go ahead.
Because as we know, the the law is set up to mitigate conflict so that we don't come to blows with each other. We don't go into violence. But this thing starts getting very close to violence when the laws and the courts don't work for the people as a whole. So here's a quote. Violence can only be concealed by a lie. And the lie, or we might read cover-up, and the lie can only be maintained by violence. Anyone who has once proclaimed violence as his method is inevitably forced to take the lie as his principle. So whether the lie is also concealment, and Marjorie just described how this information is being concealed. There are beautiful laws on our books in Pennsylvania for clean air and clean water and so on. As for the reporting for the manure management that Marjorie mentioned and so on for EPA. The problem is, as she said, and we've got to emphasize this, where is the enforcement? The state is not enforcing our own people's laws against the corporations and against the abusers, which means that it falls back on the ordinary people like Marjorie and Judy Wonkism and others to have to do all the time and the labor and the payments of their own hiring of lawyers, finding lawyers. So it's really quite a dire situation.
The state of Pennsylvania doesn't even know how many farms are required to have the plans, and it doesn't have a program or the resources to ensure that those plans would be implemented. And I have to question why.
You know, somebody said recently that it's like, in America at least, where you had a republic, and you do in theory, it's a matter of people reclaiming that. In Canada, we've never had it. So, we talk to people about establishing common law courts, trying to create it. But in America, it's really about the people taking back their republic. I mean, would you agree with that?
Yes, I agree, and I'm sure Alana does too.
Well, if you look at this really big picture and how the violence that we see against the environment and the fact that democracy is not working for we the people as a form of violence, the violence is showing that democracy is inept. And you take that to how the money, the tax dollars, can always be found for the military-industrial procedure and for these continual perennial wars of the United States. Somehow there's always money and more for that while everything else gets cut back. So when we say, well, there's no money to enforce the environmental laws that we have, why not? It's a clear misappropriation of the people's funds.
Right.
If we were to back this up, Alana, just on, I'm talking about the environmental issue in my county, if we would take a look at all the programs that they have for what they call impaired streams, and then they have other programs that are to prevent other streams from becoming impaired, what they need to do is enforce their laws and they wouldn't have to clean up the streams.
Well, and again, we have to think about why the laws aren't being enforced. And I think when we do, we come up against something that's very nefarious. And it's a big power structure. And we, the ordinary people, aren't in that ballgame. Hence the struggle that you're describing in your air township in this small rural county of Pennsylvania that's bringing your issues of importance to the forefront right now.
Yes, apparently getting a supersedis in the state of Pennsylvania was a big deal. I didn't realize that it was quite as dramatic as it was, but we do have a good attorney. His name is Jordan Yeager from Curtin and Hefner, and our township supervisors attend an annual get-together, and apparently the state always has a everyone that wants to sell anything to the local governments has a booth, and the state also has a booth. So one of our supervisors spoke to the state of Pennsylvania rep at that meeting, and he was told that we had the best environmental lawyer in the state of Pennsylvania today. And that was encouraging. But
so
I know that helped a lot.
He's
protecting the Delaware River. And if you want to look up a precedence case, it would be Robinson Township That's out near Pittsburgh, too, Alana.
And they won.
Yeah, they did. They won parts of that one, at least enough. You keep winning parts of each one, and eventually you'll get something changed.
But I'm curious, Marjorie, what's your plan B if you don't win this one?
Oh, when I engaged the lawyers in the first place, I said I want to take it all the way to the highest court in the state, and if we have to go elsewhere, we will. This is not something we're going to back down from. This is important to our community. When I took my petition around to the local population, a lot of the people said, "What good is it? What can I do? I wouldn't make a difference." And so after we talked about it, I had over 900 signatures, and that's a lot from a township that only has 1,900 residents.
Wow,
excellent. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you folks, too, on the whole issue of violence, not just violence against the land and our liberties, but there's been a lot of news, of course, about the shooting in Florida, the school shootings going on, and... Mm-hmm. You know, like these absurdities, like Trump saying, well, yeah, I guess teachers should be armed now, and there are backpacks that are lead-lined to protect the kids. What's your take on this, the whole thing of violence? Is this a manifestation of something bigger? Let's talk a little bit about that. I think it's related.
Alana?
Well, it is absolutely related. And Kevin, I'm plugging your book not because you pay me to do it, but because it's a fabulous book. Your latest book, Kevin's latest book, At the Mouth of a Cannon, mm-hmm. Conquest and Cupidity on Canada's West Coast, A Personal Account. It's just fabulous, Kevin. It's a stunning book, and your personal story of what happened when you brought out the information of how the collusion of church and state and corporation managed to steal valuable native lands, and that whole struggle, how people were paid off, how so very few of you, yourself and a Native American traditional chief and one other minister of faith, had to stand at great risk, personal risk, on this truth that you had uncovered. But if you look at any of these struggles and you take it down, and there are so often struggles over land and resources. Land and resources. You take it down to the original theft, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Where you go from a culture that had a sharing ethic of the earth to a culture, so-called culture, that has the extreme land privatization of buying and selling and profiteering from and speculation in the earth's land and resources. So we have to get to a new form of democracy that I sometimes call earth rights democracy, both the rights of the earth to be protected and the rights of people to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a really great voice in the 1800s, and there's still a movement today that I belong to with the economic teachings of Henry George. So I'll read a sentence from him, if I might.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "The equal right of all to the use of land is as clear as their equal right to breathe the air. It is a right proclaimed by the fact of our existence. For we cannot suppose that some people have a right to be in this world and others do not."
Right.
So back to your own work, Kevin, and what you talk about in your book, so important that when the conquistadors and the colonizers came and the native people are declared nobodies. They're nullis. They are not human beings. And their land is terra nullis, vacant land. Therefore, you can put a conqueror's flag in the soil and claim it.
Right.
So we have to see all the violence today that builds a whole culture of violence. The school shootings is a horrible, horrible cry for help of a culture that is so enmeshed in a culture of violence, our violent continual wars, our incarceration of masses of people, predominantly people of color, more people in our jails than proportion of population than any country on earth has ever had incarcerated, the growing homelessness, people living in tents all over this country, the increasing suffering, the health problems, and we know that health is related to wealth inequality. The more unequal a country is, the greater the health problems, no matter how much money's thrown into health care, because the greater the stress among the disenfranchised, which is now almost all of us, when you have just a handful of billionaires owning as much wealth as half the population.
And occupying the White House.
And when you come on to the health issue, Alana, I think you might remember the Geisinger Health. Geisinger's a big health care system. They did a big study with Johns Hopkins University about proximity to hog manure applicated fields, and they found over a 30% increase in the incidence and expectation of MRSA, the community-acquired MRSA, not the hospital-acquired,
right?
Which is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, which is you don't heal. You could get very bad, and you could die because no antibiotics will counter those
MRSA bacteria.
Yes, it's the diseases that you can get, the MRSA, and that's in proximity to the hog manure.
Yeah.
Which is pretty serious. An increased incidence of 30% is a lot. So you have, I would think that public health through environmental health is one of my mantras. Maybe we should talk about mental health also through environmental health, Alana. We've gotten so far from the land, and because we've been sequestered from it, it's been stolen from a lot of the population, and they don't have the ability to be socialized by the land. And the children are crying out, and they're unable to read when they leave high school, or they're medicated with the psychotropic drugs in order to just control them while they're there. But they're unsocialized, and then they're cut off from the other children. Nobody wants to be around them because they act different. Of course they do. Why wouldn't
you're talking about the most damaged kids, psychologically damaged, emotionally damaged kids that then get ostracized.
And then you have some children that just grow up in a different household, and they start to get ostracized early. And so their alienation and separation from society gets worse and worse the older they get. And that's when you have a child leaving school that doesn't know how to read and has a series of entry-level jobs, and they can't advance past the first level because they can't read to do the information that they need to advance, and they become depressed and despondent. And what else is there to live for? Is that all there is the phrase I hear from some people.
And then, of course, the medical system says you have a mental illness and you need medication. And then to have the psychiatric drugs that on the labels, the drugs for depression and so on, say there's a risk for suicide or homicide.
That's right.
What kind of society has so-called medicine for healing that says it's at risk of killing yourself or others? A sign of the utter sickness and the fact that just about every single one of these school shooter kids have been either on the psychiatric drugs or just coming off of them, which is a very dangerous point when you're coming off of them. So you haven't taken your medication for a while.
That's exactly right. I know people that have committed suicide when they've been between medications, whether they're going off of one and onto another, or they've been on another one and it's they haven't been able to evaluate them soon enough. There is not enough care.
Yeah.
If you're going, you can't do this to people.
The big pharmaceutical companies that have so much control of our government, it's a state capture by these pharmaceutical corporations, and they have huge advertising in television and so much of the mainstream media. So we're really up against, in terms of getting the truth out, this is another big monster that it's very hard to get the truth out against because they have so much power and money to control the public dialogue.
Well, you look what happened to the Attorney General in Pennsylvania, Kathleen Kane, when she took on some of the big boys and started talking about Internet porn within her own department. She's mm-hmm. I think, maybe not still in jail, but they came down on her hard.
Oh, it was terrible, and she, I've had people write to me and say, what's going on in your state when that was happening? And say, well, Alana, you remember when you got fluoride, you tackled fluoride locally. I think we should, and then years ago they managed to control advertisements for smoking. I think we ought to do the same thing for drugs.
For the pharmaceutical drugs?
Yes.
Well, I think that if we can get, it's how to get the information out. I think we need to be really talking about a lot and getting that out and get people to wake up and finding alternatives to so many different kinds of drugs.
Let me talk about that for a minute. We've got, in about 15 minutes, we've got left, unfortunately. And I want you both to come back. This is a great dialogue we're having and very important. But one of the things we often try to do is to say, okay, what can we do now? What are some of the ways we can take action? And it seems to be at the local level, this is where we get results. So what are some of the steps you think people can take?
Marjorie mentioned the fluoride, and I'll just get that out, because that was such an easy one. To get fluoride out of the water supply where I live, the Guilford Water Authority. And I had just come across, I knew about the problems of fluoride, and I came across a really excellent article, well-referenced scientifically. And I printed it out, and I went over to talk to one of the managers of the Water Authority, and he said, well, it was his opinion, if it was his way, he would rather not have fluoride in the water supply anyhow. So he brought that up to the other water managers, and they all agreed to remove the fluoride. All they needed to do was notify the state that they were going to take it out. So it's not required to have fluoride in Pennsylvania. It's an option. So they announced to the people on their water supply that they were going to remove it. There was some controversy, but not enough to prevent its removal. So there's no longer, that was such an easy one to win.
Right.
There's no longer fluoride on our water supply, but my daughter-in-law went to the dentist recently, and he said, where do you live? Oh, you live in Green Township. I'm going to give you some additional fluoride on your teeth because they took the fluoride out of your water supply.
Well,
oh my God. She said, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So the dentist, I mean, they've been so, they don't know the information about the dangers and the toxin that is fluoride. They just don't know. They're in the tradition and the mindset that it's a good thing. So there's a lot of education to do, but at least we managed to have a win on that one.
And Marjorie, what do you think? What are some things people can do, both for your campaign and generally everything we're talking about?
Well, I think that research is really good. I welcome all research. And I forward the best vetted research I can to the lawyers. In fact, I work pretty hard as a research fellow for their company. yes, and I think that everyone should take a look at what's going on in their community. This gets very expensive, but somebody has to start it, because if you don't, everyone else says, I can't do it alone. So someone has to start the ball rolling.
Yes.
And yes, and Alana's going to put me up for a couple weeks a year when we run out of money.
Oh, yeah. Well, really, it's mutual support, isn't it? And
it is. And everybody in the community
network
has been quite welcoming about this. Even some of the, I mean, I don't have bad relations with anybody in my community. There are some, though, that wish I would just disappear.
Well, that's going to be the case with Eddie. Essentially, it's being a type of whistleblower.
Yes, it is. We did have some vandalism at first.
Hey, this is a bad thing. Wake up, people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a training on how to monitor the water supply in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, research. The more we can do our own hands-on research in our localities, the better. Because
absolutely,
we have that as our ammunition
right.
to wage
it
some
is.
Of these environmental fights.
You know, what you were saying earlier, Alana, really touched me, because, you know, when we're coming out of a whole history of massive violence, of genocide, that war comes home. You know, we can't, you know, it's easy for Canadians, but we always point fingers at America, how bad it is, but nevertheless, Canada's part of the whole military-industrial system in America. The depleted uranium comes from Saskatchewan, off Indian reservations, where the Cree natives are dying from all the depleted uranium mining. And Canada's been historically a arms provider all during the Vietnam War and everything. So when you do that kind of massive violence around the world, it comes home. So you can't ignore these issues. They're all connected.
They're all connected. A colleague of mine in UK, Fred Harrison, has a book, in fact, titled The Traumatized Society.
Mm-hmm.
To more or less degrees, pretty much all of us are carrying some level of trauma deep in ourselves.
Yep.
Because if it's not a trauma from our own personal life, it's the ancestral traumas. And I know both of you well enough to know that something about your own ancestors were traumatized. My ancestors were traumatized. And that's what the point of my friend's book is, that shows these ancient traumas. And now we also know through science that trauma can be carried on collective subconscious levels. And it can actually be held in the cells and transmitted through the generations. So there is so much healing to do. And most people seem so timid and afraid. And there's so much fear locked into the human body mind, the psyche, the collective psyche, that those of us, like the three of us here, have gone through that rite of passage. We've cleared out a lot of our fear. We're very brave. And so the more we can help our friends clear that out, the stronger we'll all be.
Absolutely. What's the name of that book again?
The Traumatized Society.
Author?
Fred Harrison.
Okay. Go ahead, Margaret.
Well, I agree with Alana, because I think there's a lot of trauma in a lot of families, and it's been brought forth, and then it's been put down into your subconscious, because you're in a new country, America, and you're not supposed to talk about that anymore. One of my ancestors on my mother's side, the whole family came from France. They were French Huguenots, and you know what happened to them.
Yes.
Kevin does, because some of his ancestors were French Huguenots, right?
So... That, and then another side of my family is Scot-Irish. My grandmother was a Bailey. So we hear the stories, but they're put under the surface. And we are sitting ducks to our government if we don't stand up and take it over. Because what has happened before will happen again.
Yes. Absolutely.
John Mohawk was a chief, an elder, and also an academic at the University of New York at Buffalo. And he traces, he says, the problem of the Western world began 500 years ago. It wasn't just talking about colonialism. He was talking about the enclosures. When we rent, and you mentioned Scotland, Ireland, my ancestry is German, all these areas, that the land was held in common. There was commons rules for sharing the land and the fields and the water. And the movement began to have these private acts of enclosure where the many were pushed off of their lands and the few maintained control and power through force and domination, so that my people in Germany eventually became serfs on the land of the large land baron in northern Germany in Hesse-Kassel area. And he liked to train his serfs in military arts. So my ancestors on the Hessian side, as you know, the Hessians fought with the British against the American Revolution. They weren't just mercenaries. They were actually sold to the British to fight that war. So it wasn't just people from Africa who've been sold from one system to another. My own ancestors had that experience.
Well, absolutely. In my uncle's house, which is like 500 yards from my mother's house, there was a young woman there that she came here as an indentured servant. This hasn't been that long ago that these things have happened.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, the first slaves in America were indentured kids from England scooped off the streets to work on Virginia plantations. Half of them died. Same death rate as in Indian boarding schools. You know, it's a long trauma, like you're saying, and we got about 5 minutes left. I wanted to give you both a chance to talk about contact information you might want to share, websites, follow-up. I definitely want you back within the next few weeks to carry on this. Go ahead, either of you.
Marjorie.
Well, my email address is webstersmill@AOL.com, and anybody is welcome to contact me. I look for information and support and what I call practical information and professional outreach. If anyone's interested in helping my lawyers or helping our local community to organize, I am a recluse by nature. This has pulled me totally out of my comfort zone. So I really do need someone, don't I, Alana?
We all need someone.
We got each other.
I need all the help I can get.
Yep.
So I'm my email. Are you finished, Marjorie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is Alana, A-L-A-N-N-A, at CenturyLink.net. And let's see, I'm co-director and co-founder of Earth Rights Institute, earthrightsinstitute.org. I also work with the Henry George Movement, International Union for Land Value Taxation. The Robert Schockenbach Foundation keeps Henry George's books published. They're out of New York, so if you want to know about that. My one book is a collection of 30 of my articles and essays. Is titled The Earth Belongs to Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to email me, I will send you for free a PDF of that book.
Excellent. Any final message either of you want to say? Like I say, I hope you'll come back later in March. We will plan that. But anything else you want to comment on?
I can only say stand up and be counted.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way you're going to make a difference. Be visible to your neighbors. I lived for 30 years on that road, and there were people that didn't even know I was back there. They know now.
Good. And Alana?
I had a potluck with my neighbors a couple years ago. And just getting to know the neighbors, the people nearby, so that we can be there for each other. I mean, what I see growing out of these struggles is that we start sharing and caring and building a new economic system that serves everybody, and that
right.
we get clear about what the new economic system that's a fair economy looks like, and that we start building that on the local level, and then it just grows and grows and amplifies all around the world, because I've come to see the world as a hologram. There's a little bit of everything in each part. So there's the exploitations in our own communities that we see maybe in very, very, very large scales in where the wars are. But there's also the good people emerging to accomplish a positive vision emerging as well everywhere. And so the great sharing of each other about what's going to work and being very clear on what we don't want, what our no is, and then very clear on what our yes is. And that's going to propel us forward.
Right. Alana, Marjorie, thank you both. Sisters,
thank
and
you.
We'll
thank
talk
you,
to
Kevin.
It's been
great
wonderful, and we're carrying this on. You know, I think we're an example of what are called the remnant, right? We're leading this battle, but many will follow. And I want to thank you both, your beautiful souls, and we'll have you back soon.
Thank
you,
Kevin.
Bye.
Okay, thank you both. Marjorie Hudson, Alana Hartsock from South Central Pennsylvania. If you'd like to if you want to share this show, please go to our website, bbsradio.com/herewestand. The show is usually posted by tomorrow. And please share this, especially if you're a resident of Pennsylvania. Get involved in this movement. It's one example of what we talk about when we say we're reclaiming our governance as people, as men and women, free citizens, beholden to none, sovereign people. That was the basis of all true republics and the republic in America. It's been an honor. We're going to leave the program today by listening to The Minstrel Boy, which comes from Ireland, my homeland, one of my homelands. And it's talking to that called-out remnant. Please write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com, itccs.org, murderbydecree.com. Until next week, brothers and sisters, we'll have the Irish friends from across the waters with us next week. Listen in again, stay strong, and stay clear. I thank you.
is gone in the ranks. Someday you will find him. His father's sword he hath girded on, and his wild heart strong behind him. Land on song, said the warrior bard, though all the world betrays thee, one sword at least thy rights shall guard, one faithful heart shall praise thee. Proud soul under the heart he loved ne'er spoke again, for he tore its cords asunder and said, no chain shall sully thee, thou soul of love and bravery. Thy songs were meant for the proud and free, they shall never sound in slavery. The minstrel boy shall return again, when we hear the news we will cheer it. The minstrel boy shall return again, torn perhaps in body, not in spirit. And then may he play his harp in peace, in a world as heaven has intended.